Well, good afternoon to everyone. Our case this afternoon is number 05-1442, Christopher Stevens against Daniel McBride. Ms. Stinton-Glenn.
Good afternoon. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Kathy Lee Stinton-Glenn, and I, along with Alan Rossman, represent the appellant, Christopher Stevens, who is a death row inmate in Indiana. We are here on his appeal from a denial of federal habeas corpus out of the Northern District of Indiana. We have brought forward on appeal four issues. Three of them are species of ineffective assistance of counsel. One is the discovery issue, a denial of discovery during that federal habeas proceeding. The standard of review, as this court well knows, of the district court decision is de novo as to issues of law and mixed law and facts and clear error with regard to factual determinations. The anti-terrorism and effective death penalty law provides for clear error review of the state court ineffective assistance of counsel adjudications, and the discovery issue is subject to an abuse of discretion. At this time, we wish to address one particular issue that we have brought forward, and that's the ineffective assistance of counsel within the scope and the context of Wiggins. In this case, we contend that the state court rulings on the ineffective assistance of counsel claims were unreasonable applications of controlling Supreme Court law, obviously of Strickland, and then very specifically and on point, Wiggins. Also, that there were factual inaccuracies that were inaccurate by clear and convincing evidence, which renders them unreasonable determination of facts in light of the evidence presented in the state court proceedings. We will note that the federal district court refused to apply Wiggins to Mr. Stevens' case. As a very brief predicate to our argument, we would like to highlight a couple of facts. The most important being that counsel's first impressions of Christopher Stevens, their very first impressions, were that he was a seriously disturbed young man, a very disturbed young man who was in great need of mental health evaluation. It was their very first impression. And that impression stuck with him throughout the representation of
Ms. Stinton-Glenn, can I ask you a question?
Yes, ma'am.
It seems to me, analytically, one could worry about ineffective assistance of the lawyers, or one could worry about incompetence or ineffectiveness of some sort of the expert. And they aren't necessarily the same thing. And even if we were to think that Dr. Lennon was way out on the fringes of the psychology profession, why does that make the lawyers ineffective for perhaps not realizing that or not using him?
Well, Your Honor, this is, we feel that that particular decision to, not necessarily the decision to hire Dr. Lennon, because when they hired him at the outset, he actually provided an affidavit to the attorneys and to the court in order to secure funding, that he had reviewed Mr. Stevens' record and that he had determined that there were likely mental illness diagnoses that could be made and disorders. So at the outset, when they secure him, we don't feel that that decision was ineffective. Where it becomes ineffective is after a short period of time and their greater familiarity with Dr. Lennon is developed, they come to know that he ascribes to this very unusual myth of mental illness, which puts him in the one percentile of the professionals in the psychological field. So he's very definitely out of the mainstream. He's not even a rivulet that's near it. And at that point, when he has made that very clear, he has told counsel Clutter that I do not believe in mental illness. I don't believe in mental illness at all. And he provides a report that has information that frankly converts him from a defense expert later down the line to a prosecution expert. They're aware of that, and they're aware of that, Your Honor, 6.5 months before trial.
So what should they have done, in your view?
We believe that what they should have done is they should have gone back to Judge Hyde and indicated to Judge Hyde that because the expert that they had contacted has indicated very straightforwardly that he does not believe in mental illness, that they are then unable to obtain any type of a mental illness diagnosis. And they were very sure that mental illness was going to be an issue in this case. And one of the significances of that is that Indiana has mental illness mitigators. They're statutory mitigators that are very specific to mental illness. And additionally...
So you're talking about the sentencing stage.
At the sentencing stage. And stepping back into the guilt phase, we also have a guilty but mentally ill verdict that can come out of a death-eligible case. And it... Constitutionally, our Supreme Court has not indicated that someone who is convicted of guilty but mentally ill is necessarily not going to get the death penalty. But practically speaking, and the Indiana Supreme Court has said this itself, practically speaking, no death-eligible person who has been found guilty but mentally ill has ever been executed. So the need for a diagnosis for them to go forward to determine any sort of tactical strategy was necessary.
So there's nothing in this. I thought he was actually also instructed not to prepare a report, but that
no, you are correct.
That to one side, though, there's nothing in this report that looks like an ordinary psychological diagnosis.
Absolutely, Your Honor, we agree with you. Agree with you completely, and I believe that the post-conviction testimony of Drs. Kaplan and Dr. Coons, and then their social consultant Diana Burks, all concur with that. And Dr. Coons and Drs. Kaplan, one a psychologist and one a psychiatrist, both conducted a battery of cases. They both independently came to the conclusion that there were a list of diagnosable mental illnesses that could have been brought forward on behalf of Mr. Stevens. I'm sorry, Your Honor, did you have...
Well, no, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just want to know, what is he called, depression?
Pardon me?
How would he define depression? Is that a form of mental illness?
Your Honor, I'm a layperson, and from a layperson's point of view, I certainly consider it as some type of a mental illness. But within the context of Dr. Lennon's report, it is a descriptor. It is not considered as a diagnosis. As a matter of fact, looking carefully at his report, what he does is he provides sort of a narrative of descriptions of characteristics, but he never clearly diagnoses anything. Another thing that's very interesting is Dr. Lennon used an MMPI that was out of date, and that was pointed out by both Dr. Coons and Dr. Kaplan. Even so, both of Kaplan and Coons stressed that had Lennon been of another bent within his profession, he would have identified a series of mental illnesses, of things that would have suggested to him that he needed to conduct further testing and look into further. Yes, sir.
Now, when the attorneys went to the or realized they had to do something about this, if they had gone to the judge and had asked for a second expert, would they have encountered any particular hurdles? Did the defense have a right to a second hearing? What kind of a showing would they have had to make in order to get a second expert?
Well, Your Honor, under Ake versus Oklahoma, Mr. Stevens has a right to a competent expert. And under the ABA guidelines, it stresses very clearly that a capital defense team should include, now it may not be a mandate, but the Supreme Court has said in Strickland and Wiggins that the ABA guidelines are their benchmark for performance. So they were to have on board an expert who was trained and capable of making assessments of psychological and mental disorders and diseases. And Dr. Lennon certainly did not fulfill that role. And getting more to the crux of your question, Your Honor, it's speculative as to whether or not they would have had hurdles in terms of getting funding. But they certainly had a very good argument. They could have presented to Judge Hyde quite simply that, Your Honor, we just do not have a mental health diagnosis. We have nothing to work with here. We cannot strategize. We simply can't make any type of a strategy with regard to a defense if we don't know what we have here. If indeed Judge Hyde had resisted, the Indiana Supreme Court has said, you come to us. I mean, there have been situations where there may be some resistance. Now, they could have filed an interlocutory appeal and taken that request up to the Indiana Supreme Court based in Ake versus Oklahoma, and they certainly would have established a good record and they would have preserved the issue. But what they did is they didn't even try. They literally rolled over. It's mind-boggling. It renders me speechless, and that happens very seldom to me, to even imagine that one would not try. And when you have this person who is charged with a sensational, heart-tearing out crime that has been splayed all over the media, and you know how difficult it is, that they would not have given greater effort to find an expert who could have been beneficial. And when I say that, please do not misunderstand me, because we are not talking about expert shopping, because that is not the issue. If they had any competent mainstream psychologist, psychiatrist, evaluate Mr. Stevens, it may very well have been that they could have come back and not diagnosed him with anything. But they would have had a diagnosis, and they would have fulfilled the benchmark, the floor of the ABA guidelines as dictated under Wiggins and under Stevens. So they literally abandoned their client at that point. Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to, just for a moment, since time is short, ask you, suppose we were to agree with you on the level of performance and agree that it falls below that which Strickland says it has to be. There was an enormous amount of, he himself made it very clear that he had committed these crimes, and he remembered a lot about them. He did all sorts of things. So I would like you to discuss for a moment the prejudice side, particularly for the conviction, but for the sentence as well.
Okay. Oh, and I appreciate that opportunity because we feel that is so very important. With regard to the guilt phase, I mentioned very briefly that there is a guilty but mentally ill verdict that is available.
Doesn't the state say you haven't been talking about that up until now? Is that right?
Your Honor, I believe that was evidenced in the PCR hearing. IAC expert Robert Hill, as a matter of fact, makes a very specific comment to that and stresses that there is that availability. Okay. In terms of prejudice, obviously this is a case where acquittal is not a likely outcome. It would not necessarily... there wouldn't necessarily be a reasonable possibility of that as a different outcome. But we have a case here where there is a possibility of a different outcome, and it could be the guilty but mentally ill. That type of a defense flows seamlessly into the mitigation argument.
Did they ask for that as a verdict option?
They did not. They didn't consider it. The only thing that they considered was voluntary manslaughter. And it was, and just briefly, without belaboring that particular issue, the Indiana Supreme Court stated flatly and very correctly there wasn't a shred of evidence.
Well, that's what they said in their first opinion.
Yes,
but then in
did.
Their second opinion, they seemed to say, oh, well, but maybe it should have been thrown into the hopper anyhow.
Well, they equivocate there. And obviously that is disturbing because they were so unequivocal on direct appeal. But when they equivocate, and it's certainly impossible for me to understand why, to be quite frank. I cannot. But in attempting to understand why, it seemed that they were looking at what they viewed as a situation where there was really no good option. and that within their discussion they were suggesting that, well, heck, one bad option is as good as another bad option. Obviously, from our perspective, we don't think that's true. We think that there was one option. It may not have succeeded, but that's not our test. We don't have to show that it would succeed. But there was a chance, and it was more than negligible. It was a chance that could have, as I said before, flow so well into a mitigation case. In terms of the prejudice with regard to the mitigation argument, or the mitigation phase, the penalty and the sentencing phase, what was... You know, there is something that is so completely wrong when your own expert becomes your opposition's expert, and when the witness that defense hoped would, long before the case started, would be their best witness, turns out to be, other than Christopher himself, the best witness for the prosecution. You know, Christopher is not the only person who has made a confession and ultimately been given some relief on ineffective assistance. I mean, Terry Williams is a pretty brutal case. It was a terrible case. Terry Williams' case also bears some other likenesses in the sense that there was a protracted killing. Mr. Williams... Not according to Dr. Lennon, but certainly according to Drs. Kaplan and Coons. Mr. Stevens, yeah. I'm sorry. According to Drs. Kaplan and Dr. Coons, dissociated. He blanked out. Where the defense team interpreted clicked as a shred of evidence to try and support their sudden heat argument, which it wouldn't work, it could very well be demonstrative, or at least should have suggested to them that maybe there was some other kind of a mental break.
At the PCR hearing, Drs. Kaplan and Coons explained exactly what the dissociative disorder is and
yes.
why it would... So that's where that is in the record.
Yes, Your Honor, they did.
Okay.
What occurred at... back to the prejudice with regard to penalty and sentencing, what occurred during those proceedings is that, interestingly, the defense put Dr. Lennon on. And very much like the Miller case that came out of the Seventh Circuit some time ago, this is a situation where you have to say, why on earth would you put this man on when you know what he's going to say? Now, they said that they didn't exactly know what his testimony was, but they had his report. I see that my rebuttal time is being triggered, but I'd like to finish this thought, if I may. They knew what he was going to say in essence because they had his report for 6.5 months. And they knew that he was going to say there was no mental illness. They knew that he was going to say that everything was free will, everything was choice. And what happened in brief, and I've got loads of quotes, but what happened ultimately is that the prosecution latched onto that, they grabbed it, they held it, and they beat it. I mean, they beat that terminology like a drum. It was just amazing. They used it in the penalty phase. They used it in their rebuttal. It was, you know, defense's own witness says it's free will. They used Lennon's own words to say, to rebut the existence of those statutory mitigators, the C2 mitigator. There is no evidence, they said, that his childhood bore any nexus to this. There is no evidence that there was any mental disturbance. And they beat that like a drum. They said Stevens, the adult, had a choice, chose to molest and brutally murder. The state asked that the defendant take responsible for his actions, those choices. They said Lennon said, in spite of whatever problems Christopher Stevens had as a child, he does in fact possess free will. Lennon said he is responsible for his actions, and that's what we asked the court to hold him to. The sentencing judge then took Lennon's nomenclature. They took his words and put into the sentencing order, both the written sentencing order and the verbal sentencing order, and said, Lennon said this is free will. This was conscious. And so that's where our prejudice is, Your Honor. We missed out on two enormously weighty substantive mitigators. And I see that I'm into my last minute, and I'd like to at least reserve a few seconds for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have conferred with my with my fellow judges, and we're going to give you 5 extra minutes and give you 5 extra minutes as well. So you now have 25 minutes rather than 20,
We're
adding 5 minutes for to your rebuttal time.
Thank you very much.
May it please the court.